Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. My name is Terry Fletcher. We are in part two of the importance of a practice assessment. Last week, I dove into giving you some five steps, and hopefully they were easy steps, to take a look at if your practice or could benefit from a periodic checkup and making sure that you keep your financial health of your practice, your bottom line, in good health. And that's really what we want to continue with this week. We were able to get through two of the steps of the five that we were chatting with and talking about and discussing. And so we're going to kind of dive into that. But before we do that, we want to thank our sponsoring partners, MedLearn Media, the parent company of MedLearn Publishing. As we are now into a busy year of 2018, and boy, did it start off busy. We have exciting new products, publications, and services. You can find their relaunch of the Peripheral Cardiology Coder book written by myself and Jeff Mychek at MedLearn.com. It offers step-by-step coding through an instruction through diagnostic and interventional cardiac cath, diagnostic and therapeutic interventional radiology procedures, which are the peripherals, as well as diagnostic cardiology, pulmonary, and sleep study. So if you mention that you, if when you purchase the book, if you mention that you heard about it on the CodeCast podcast by Terry Fletcher, you'll get a 10% discount. So again, we appreciate MedLearn's sponsorship. And let's get back into the importance of a practice assessment and making sure that you have those steps and it's giving you some understanding or some maybe some thought-provoking things that you can just take a look at and just kind of give you some perspective, maybe meditate on and say, okay, is this something that we need to do in my practice? And I can guarantee you, just taking a look at things will give you some perspective, if nothing else. Are you doing things right? You know, is there anything that you can do to add value to your practice? Has your practice been on a track of just really being status quo? One of the things we actually podcast on this was the telemedicine and telehealth. And looking at that from an example of getting into, new technology, a new way to deliver medicine to patients. And let's just say that's not for you. And it isn't for half the practices in the country. But let's say you're thinking, well, there's practice down the street that's doing it. And this practice over there is, you know, or thinking about it. You want to be proactive. You don't want to be the one saying, well, maybe I'll try it now after everybody's doing it. So those kinds of things that impact healthcare delivery, reimbursement, and things like that, you really want to make sure that you're ahead of the industry or at least keeping up with them. Otherwise, it can really, really depend on the viability of your practice moving forward. So in starting in number three, because before we talked about, just to reiterate, we talked about evaluate the market. And so really looking at the area, the geographic location, et cetera. So the marketplace that you're in. Then we looked at assessing workflows. And so you could go back and listen to the last CodeCast podcast and really understand what we brought to you for that little step there. And then another step three, this would be compare against industry benchmarks. So you don't have to evaluate your practice alone. There are tools and services available that utilize benchmarking to enable you to compare your performance against external standards. So once information is gathered, benchmarking is an important tool for trying to understand how your practice performance compares to others, both in your defined service area, your region, and even nationally. And this is something that you probably have heard of, you know, something called a physician's what are they called? Bell curve. I lost the term for a second. So when you're looking at, for example, E&M services, you have physicians in your practice and you know who they are that love level five or love level four services, whether it be newer established patient, or they always seem to, I don't want to say err on a higher level, but that's where they kind of try to live. And when you're looking at that, you're thinking, okay, are we going to get in trouble because everyone else in our practice knows that patients or what they call a bell curve. You're going to have those patients that are easier, those patients that are harder, higher risk. You know, you're going to have a patient from every walk of life come into your practice. Now, you may focus your practice on maybe a higher risk type of patient or more a geriatric practice, more Medicare patients. You could be in an area where you're really just dealing with sick patients as well. We get that. and looking at those types of practices. So when you take into the consideration, well, maybe this practice is a little bit different, then it's really important to look at these industry benchmarks. One of the companies out there that does this, and we are not sponsored by them, I do teach for them twice a year, but it's Medical Group Practice Association, and that's MGMA. And they're one of the best sources for comparative benchmarks for practices, medical practices. They have staffing, wages, overhead expenses, revenue, and patient flow. And you can calculate the ratio of staff members and their salaries to providers and compare this against appropriate benchmarks. So this information can help identify areas where the practice may be overspending or overstaffing down to the facility or role level as compared to a similar practice of your specialty. So this is where you really want to, you know, get some of that information so you know where you're at. You know, practices are busy. It doesn't mean they're efficient. And so being busy isn't the same thing. It's kind of like somebody saying, well, I'm thin, so I'm healthy. That's not necessarily the case. So, you know, you need to make sure that, again, looking at the healthiness of your practice from, and I hate to keep mentioning it's the financial bottom line, but when we get into things such as the workflows and these benchmarks and everything, you're looking at the financial viability of your practice. It always comes down to the bottom line of the dollar. And that gets into the step four, and that's crunch the financial numbers. So like in any business, a healthy medical practice needs to have a healthy revenue stream. So my background, not just as a coder and an auditor and an educator, you know, my degree, my educational background, formal education is I'm an economics major. So I'm dealing with numbers. And so when we look at that revenue stream, that means a proper analysis of your finances. That is an essential part of any medical practice assessment. So financial metrics that should be included are the total charges and collections by providers, gross and net collection percentages, charges and collections per visit, and the number of days that bills just sit there. So short versus long-term AR, which is your accounts receivable. So these metrics help to identify and eliminate errors and patterns in your billing department or between your internal staff and your external billing service and establish your current profitability. Further, the reimbursement schedule for your top CPT codes from your top health insurance payers should be revisited quarterly to ensure payments are accurate and received in a timely manner. They all align with, or hopefully better than, your competition and industry benchmarks. So a couple of examples on this, which actually to me were a little bit kind of frightening. I've mentioned it before, but just to reiterate, this one I have, and I had a practice, GI practice, up north that, and I'm in Southern California, that was kind of interesting. They couldn't understand why they had such few payments over the last year since they switched out to sending out their billing. So they have an external billing company, and there was a question of, were they efficient? Were they getting things out? And they just didn't know how to assess it. So they said, can you just come in and take a look? We're just trying to figure out what the heck's going on, but we haven't had a check from Medicare in over, you know, 30 days. So we thought we'd look at it. I'm thinking, that is very strange. Have you called Medicare? They said, we've contacted them. And they said, they really haven't had anything from us, which makes no sense because we look in our computer and we have a lookup station. We can see what's going on. And then in the last 6 months, they said, you know, we're seeing that we've collected maybe $20,000. So I said, okay, let me see if I can figure it out. I happen to know their software. So I went in just to take a look. And after 1 hour there, what I found was kind of frightening. So when they actually, when the subbed out billing service who was out of country, and I'm not picking on people who are out of country. I think, you know, that's an interesting concept. Obviously, labor's cheaper. I prefer things that are in country only because there's different quality measures, but you know, you just have to make sure you do your due diligence if you choose to go that route. But what they did when they were inputting services is they hit one button in their software that suppressed claims. So claims didn't even make it out the door, even though it reflected in on the patient's ledger that it was billed, because when they went in to set the electronic billing to go, it actually set to go and it went virtually. So what that means is that internally it went, but because it was suppressed, the claim didn't have anywhere to go across the airwaves. So it never hit the payer. And I found this out within an hour. And so we had to go back and open up all those lines. The other thing is that they relied on the billing service to understand modifiers. And in a gastroenterology practice, that's a problem because if you do multiple endoscopy services, the endoscopic services, so multiple endoscopies, there are different rules for those services than there are for other services, meaning you can use the 59 modifier more often that you know, if you're in different parts of the colon and different technique when it comes to removing polyps, you get a different, you can bill another code for that. And what this billing service did is they were using, first of all, the wrong modifier. They also flipped the claims where the highest valued procedure was not the one that was coded as the initial procedure seen on the claim. It was down the third, fourth, fifth line item. And so there was just so many things that were messed up on the claim. It wasn't even funny. And, you know, even screenings on patients on that, they didn't have the right diagnosis, which would assist the patient in waiving their copay and deductible, which they assumed. So it took us, you know, at least it took us about 2 weeks to get everything fixed. And immediately they saw their next month, you know, Medicare check go up to the $130,000 that they expected. And we had to go back and try to collect as much as we could over the last year. So those kinds of things, and we're looking at crunching the financial numbers and understanding the reimbursements, you know, really looking at things from a perspective that is somebody actually seeing what's going on. In my last week's podcast on, or I should say the week before on hidden revenue, we touched on something that called out staff to really look at some things, staff and administrators and billers, that you don't want to just take what the payer says as that's gospel. And one of the examples I gave was moderate sedation. And when my very first podcast way back in November, I did a moderate sedation. It was more capturing the service. But one of the things we found over 2017, because it's a new code series, 99151 to 99158, in this code series, we found that there are some commercial plans that say, oh, we don't pay for moderate sedation. And so what practices were doing is just saying, well, they still don't pay for it, even though there's a new code for it. And so we're just writing it off when we bill it. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. I said, well, before you write it off, let's take a look at it. Let's see if it's actually something where you're correct that it's part of the contract. And the first question I get is, how do I find that out? Okay, well, you have to ask for it. So you have to say, I need a copy of the contract which shows that is included or bundled, as they like to call it, or inclusive of the primary procedure. And then if you're a preferred provider and you are a participating provider with that plan, you're entitled to contract language and information. Secondly, if they don't give that to you or it's a struggle to get it, what you want to do is you want to do comparative analysis. So take a look at an EOB from, let's say, 2016. So that's an explanation of benefits, the attachment to your insurance check. And let's talk about cardiology, for example. So let's say that there was a cardiac cath that was performed in 2016, and that was inclusive of moderate sedation. And so we want to make sure that we look at that price, and that price would have been, let's say, $280. Well, it was taken down in 2017 about 4%. So now we're looking at it going down to about $242. So we look at that and say, okay, that's why we get to code for an additional code for moderate sedation, because we were given a heads up by Medicare saying they were going to adjust the cost because they took out the value of the sedation. Well, what you want to do is when you have a payer that says we're not paying for it, do a comparison. So look and see, if we talk about cardiac cath, for example, look and see what they paid for it in 2016. Look and see what they pay for it in 2017. And if they lowered the price without your knowledge or without your consent and you signing off on it as a contract provider that your fee schedule is now changing, then you can use that and utilize that as that company is acting in bad faith. They're basically saying we're not paying that extra code that's now created to reflect using moderate sedation. And they're giving you a reason saying it's still inclusive of the service, but they're discounting the service. That's so incorrect. It's not even funny. You have to be able to utilize their words against them if they're inappropriate or acting in bad faith and just putting out something to deny it. And so we were able to go back on a couple of different practices. If you're part of our Coding Corner on-demand service, and I've mentioned this before, this is the Unlimited Coding Questions, a membership. You can get us to help you write these letters back to these insurance companies and fight for your money. And so looking and looking at those financial numbers and crunching those numbers, just the smallest of things, we call it hidden revenue, is going to be important in your billing office and your internal billing staff. And then number five, it's called consider your culture. So the culture of a practice is sometimes the most difficult item to measure, but it can't be ignored as a factor in your success as a business providing consumer services. So the U.S. healthcare industry saw a voluntary turnover rate of 15.3% in 2016, up from 14.4% the previous year, according to data from Comp Data Surveys and CompForce, and this is a benchmark. This is, as an industry, healthcare has one of the highest voluntary and total turnover rate. That means people are just quitting across the industries, matching banking and financing and finance, and topped only by hospitality, which is hotel service. And so you want to figure out, how can you retain that top talent and cultivate a friendly family feel? That is what creates an enviable practice. It creates a productive workplace with a patient-centered atmosphere, and at an atmosphere that also helps you meet the patient satisfaction metrics while growing your practice through positive online reviews, survey responses, and word of mouth. Remember, everybody likes to Yelp. Okay, that's a platform where you can give an opinion on a restaurant you were at, a doctor's office you were just at. And I look at it when I do things like, you know, in my spare time, I like to go wine tasting up in Napa, or, you know, visit a new restaurant in town. And the first thing I look at consumer reviews. I look at the pictures to see how it is. I like comfortable seating. I like ambiance. And then I like to see how the customer service was as well. And people are quick to tell you the negative. They're not always quick to tell you the positive, but they do tell you the negative. But you get both in those kinds of platforms. And so you want to be in there showing that your culture is to not only keep staff, because keep this in mind as well. I know this is part of it. This is kind of time consuming, but these steps have to be really looked at and followed. Is that when you are a business that really caters to such a high percentage of Medicare and elderly patients, and every business does, even when you get into some of the businesses or the medical practices that cater to some of the more millennial age groups, you know, like derm and things like that. But you get into cardio and GI and general surgery and, you know, anything, primary care, you have a very high population of geriatric patients. And those patients do not like change. They do not like change. And so doctors don't like change either. And so when you can have the same hardworking top talent and top employees stay at your practice, how are you making that happen? Be enviable in that position. What is it that you do in your office that shows that you're proactive in your success? And a full practice assessment can be invaluable in delivering that balanced view of internal and external factors impacting your practice. So you can look at meaningful metrics and appropriate benchmarking numbers, and also use those analytical tools that I mentioned to crunch numbers and transform them into data that can be actionable information for you. And it can just give you some strategic information to improve the operational areas, or maybe you might have some impact and you need to really look at that, the outcome there. You need to learn what your inefficient processes are, people, other factors that may be holding you back in your practice. And a medical practice assessment, it can really uncover the underlying problems and empower you to make informed decisions. So decisions that will position you and your patients for success now and in the years ahead. You didn't do this. You didn't become a physician. You didn't become a practice so that at some point you can, you know, lead a slow, painless death at some point when it comes to not being able to sustain yourself for years to come. So really take a look at this. And just to reiterate again, number one, evaluate the market. Number two, assess workflows. Number three, compare against industry benchmarks. Number four, crunch the financial numbers. And number five, consider your culture. Consider the culture in your practice. And if you need more information or how to get this started, or you really feel like this is the time to look at an assessment now in 2018, please feel free to contact me. My website, terryfletcher.net, and also my email is terryfletchercpc@aol.com. You'll also hear it as we end the program for today. But we appreciate you listening in, appreciate the downloads. Make sure you tell everybody to look at our CodeCast podcast. We drop every Tuesday, and so we're really happy to have you come along. So thank you again to our client base and to our new clients and listeners that happened today that came on. And everyone, make it a great day and a great week. And until next time, thank you again for attending.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.